You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Why did you leave your last job? You need a good answer for that. It's not that I got laid off or fired. It is there were changes in the organization. They decided to let go of a lot of people. Unfortunately, I was one of them. But what this has given me the opportunity to do is right? Put that finishing positive spin on it.
Yes.
Tell me about a time when you were successful. Tell me about a time when you failed. These are all the standard questions, and they're variations of them. So if you can answer it one way for one, you can answer it for many, that helps somebody be ready to interview because they know what they're going to say when they're asked that question. It doesn't say they're not like slapping their head thinking, oh no, there's that question. How am I going
to
answer?
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections. Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connection Network. I'm here with Hannah Morgan. Hannah, I'm excited to be with you today. What's up? How are you?
I'm great, Ben. Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
You are the career Sherpa. Can I start with the dumbest question ever, but some people might be wondering?
Yeah. What is a Sherpa?
What's a Sherpa?
A lot of people ask. So if you've ever heard of Mount Everest, they have Sherpas, which are
yes.
The guides that help people get to the top of the mountain. And so while those guides, those guides have been doing it for years, they know the best way to the top of the mountain. So I sort of consider myself a career Sherpa, helping people, traverse the mountain of their job search or their career to help them find the easiest way there.
You are the guide, and you are a brilliant Sherpa, Hannah. Testimonial from me, the content you put out, the articles you write, the blogging is all incredible. We'll go to the quick bio just to give a little context to everyone here. Hannah, you are a job search and career strategist, been a contributor to U.S. News and World Report since 2011. She is a nationally recognized author, speaker on job search trends, career development, and was actually recognized as a LinkedIn top voice in job search and careers in 2019. So recent prestige there. Your LinkedIn following's huge. Your advice, your insight is incredible. And again, Hannah, I'm just happy to have you here today. I have so many questions. I know the listeners do as well. To get started, that's just a bio. Introduce yourself. Who is Hannah Morgan? What do you do? What lights you up? Introduce yourself in any way that you feel comfortable.
Yeah. So when people ask me, tell me about yourself, my usual answer is, I help people understand how to look for work better. Because the last time we had to look for work was 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago, and it's changed. So in order to help somebody understand how to look for work better, I have to follow the trends. I have to know what's going on. And I talk to a lot of recruiters and job seekers and career coaches and resume writers to stay up to date with what's going on. That's what gets me up in the morning. I love learning about the latest trends. I just had a conversation this morning about the salary transparency law that's going into effect in New York City in May, which means that all job postings in New York City have to list a salary range. So I was having a conversation about the pros and cons of that. And that's that's the kind of stuff that gets me excited. Outside of work, I have two boys who are both athletes. One plays at the collegiate level and one plays as a, right now, a senior in high school. So we're sort of winding down his last year of sports, and that's been really exciting too. And the parents are wonderful. That's what makes it really great, is that, you know, we've known these parents since the boys were little. So it's been fun to bond and have all those shared experiences, the wins and the losses, and see what's going to happen for them next. So, you know, in the summertime, we're in the Finger Lakes. So I love to be on one of the Finger Lakes. I live in Canandaigua, but spend a lot of time on Cayuga, because it's
beautiful place.
A nicer lake.
Cayuga's so underrated, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
What sports do the kids play?
They play football and lacrosse.
Football and lacrosse. Yeah. And you are the pro at staying up to date. You actually learn what's new and what's trending. That's how you stay chipper. What are some of your predictions or some of the trends for 2022? Where is career and job search going?
So we're still coming out of this pandemic, and there's a lot of uncertainty. But this has all really benefited the worker, the employee. It's given them more power. So we're at a point now where some companies are remote, some companies are in person, some companies are doing a hybrid. And what we know, what we learned from this pandemic, is that people can actually work remotely and be very productive. In fact, more the productivity during the pandemic was higher than it was pre-pandemic. So, you know, if employers want to keep their employees happy, one of the things that they're going to do, and what we've seen them start to do, is leave that flexible work environment as part of the mix, because people really seem to enjoy that. And it's been working. We also have seen an increase in salaries. I mean, inflation is chipping away at that a little bit. Sure. But it's been wonderful to see that increase in salaries, especially for the minimum wage employees and for the essential workers. We're starting to see that bump up. And just the empowerment that employees have, job seekers have, and employees have in asking for more money and negotiating, you know, renegotiating the terms of how they work, when they work, where they work. All of that is great. So those are some of the biggest things that we've seen happen. Technology is a good thing. We've all learned how to interview over Zoom with video cameras, which, you know, a lot of people don't like, but it still saves a lot of time and money and energy for everybody involved. Will we get back to in-person interviewing? I think so. I think that everybody, you know, in the final stages of the interview missed that, because they really want to feel they have a better chance to get to know somebody. So those are some of the big changes that I've noticed. As long as we can maintain, we as employees and job owners, if we can maintain this mentality of growth, the growth mindset, and always being willing to adapt and change and grow, I think we're all going to do great.
I think so too. Adapt, grow, change. So much to talk about. So in a moment, I want to get into video interviews, but I kind of want to ask the question, why do a couple of these trends? We're going to skip over inflation because that's such a complicated one, right? But I want to ask the question, why do you think that people are more efficient working from home? You said productivity's went up. Do we know why productivity is going up and why people are rocking and rolling at home?
I think there are a lot, there has been research on that, and there isn't one reason. It's a combination of reasons. People are able to work when they're, when they're most productive, right?
Yes.
So when we have to work 8 to 5 in an office, there are a lot of people who do not do their best work at 8 o'clock in the morning, but now they don't have to. They can work from 12 p.m. till midnight if they want to, as long as the work gets done. So there's that flexibility to work when it works best with your schedule. I think people also, you know, we went through a lot of stress with the pandemic, and even with all that stress, people were still productive. I think there was this feeling that not having somebody look over your shoulder was sort of liberating.
Yes.
I think people felt empowered. I think not having to commute, if you're you know, somebody in one of the big metropolitan areas, not having to commute an hour or more a day is really a wonderful thing. And now people have all that extra time. They don't have to worry and juggle, you know, if they've got kids, they don't have to worry about juggling J-care and trying to figure out that out. You don't have to get dressed up, right? So I can show up for work in my pajamas and then take my shower later in the day. I think there are just so many reasons why people are more productive. They're not inundated with meetings. When we think about the workplace, the bulk of the reason people don't like going back to work is because they're always in meetings. Right. So, you know, we're getting back to having more meetings on Zoom, but still there aren't as many meetings. And so this asynchronous environment where you work and get the work done and meet and get the meetings done in an asynchronous fashion, I think is one of the ways in which we've become more productive as a working community.
So much more productive. I personally love it. As a business owner, I also love that a lot of people are working from home, and the fact that it's easier to quickly host meetings and quickly jump on and off calls. It's been amazing for me. And the other thing you brought up, a big trend, is the empowerment, like asking for more money, pivoting out of a role that you're unhappy with, pivoting into a completely different career. A lot of people are doing these kind of things. Why do you think that's occurring?
Well, so during the pandemic, we knew that companies downsized a lot of people or let go of a lot of people. And then we had the great resignation. So a lot of people just left jobs. Right. So companies are short-staffed. And when they're short-staffed, that puts a lot of strain on the survivors, the people that are still there. But it also forces them to say, okay, if we're gonna bring people back into the office, we want to make sure that we're an attractive company. We want to be an employer of choice.
Yes.
So what can we do to make ourselves more attractive? Because it's not always about the money. It's about keeping the flexibility. And so as more and more companies, you know, first it started with remote, right? All of those people who love working remotely now had more options of more companies to apply to, because so many companies were offering remote work opportunities.
Yes.
And that sort of carried through. And I think people love having choices and feeling that they have more control over their situation. We're not factory workers anymore. And so the fact that, you know, there are employers who still require us to physically be in an office because that's just the way we get things done here, I don't think is very modern. And it's not going to attract a lot of employees.
It's not going to. It's a whole new world. I'm excited to, I like change. Personally, I'm excited to see some of these things changing. The one thing that you did mention was the like virtual interviews. That's a piece of change that I don't know if I like it or not. I like it for the efficiency of maybe I could be at 4 interviews in a day. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to get the culture and like a real feel for the company I'm speaking with. What is your thought on the whole virtual interview thing? Where should we start?
So in the olden days, like before the pandemic, 3 years ago,
the olden days,
the first screening interview was almost always done by phone, right? Yeah. That was where we were. And it's just sort of to answer some basic questions, you know, are you really who you look like on paper? In my opinion, I don't care if that's done in through video or phone. It doesn't really matter. It makes sense to do it in video so they can get more information up front. Sure. But when we get to the first and second, so here's the other thing that's happening. Companies are taking a lot longer, have added more interview sessions to the process. So in the olden days, you could have maybe 1, 2, 3 interviews and get the job offer. It's taking much longer now. There was somebody who was interviewing for a job and they were on their 11th interview.
Wow.
So that's extreme. But
yes.
But I think that one of the reasons why employers are sort of more hesitant or taking employees through more interviews is because, as you said, it's hard to really get a grasp of who they are interviewing in the same way as you would if they, if the person met in person. And I think for employee, you know, that's from the employer side. From the employee standpoint, I want to meet the employees. I want to see what the office looks like. I want to feel the culture. And that's, you can't see that. You could get the video tour of the, but it's just not the same. There's so much that we can pick up. So video interviews will continue because, again, they're highly productive. People don't have to wait in waiting rooms. They don't have to commute in. They can be scheduled back to back, which is really not easy to do when you're doing in-person interviews. So I don't think they'll go away, but I think that those two will become more hybrid. So maybe your first two interviews will be video, and then you'll get into the office situation if that works. But it really depends on the culture of the company. And if the company is going to continue virtually, I don't think they're going to bring you in for an in-person interview.
They wouldn't need to.
No. And there's so many companies that have said, you know what, we're going 100% virtual, and because we like it and our employees like it, and we're going to continue doing that. And their culture and the way they do things is really interesting to watch because it's very different. Right. That we, when we went through this world of hybrid learning, or we began meeting online, it was just sort of a replacement for the in-person.
Right. But
when you are a company that's 100% remote, you look at systems and processes and meetings in a very different light because you have to take into account, okay, there are people who are in different regions and they can't all be in the same room at the same time to meet virtually. So what can we do to make this meeting still informative and beneficial for people no matter where? So those are the things that get exciting, right? The culture and how you evaluate that. And video interviews are just one way for people to get to know each other, right? So
just one way, and it does depend on the culture of the company. I love this. I'm tremendously optimistic that COVID is mostly behind us, or at least we're veering into the abyss. Let's get rid of this long term. But something that's not going to go away is the virtual world and the virtual interviews and the video interviews. I kind of want to talk about two people, and we're going to start with the job seeker. So I want to talk about the job seeker, and then later we'll talk about the career professional that might want to pivot but doesn't know. But starting with the job seeker, let's say they're sitting down and they've got a virtual interview. How do I prepare for an interview virtually? Do I have different things that I need to prepare? I've already done countless in-person interviews. Is there anything I need to do differently for my virtual interview?
Yeah, so that's such a good question, because there are things that the video interview has to be, interviewer has to be aware of. And there are things that you think about and you coach people about before they do their podcast, right?
Right.
Except the interviewer isn't coaching the job seeker on how to do things.
Sure.
So it is little things like, is the lighting sufficient? What does your background look like? Look at the camera, not at where you are on the screen. Be at the right distance. Don't use your hands. You're a hand talker, because that doesn't show up. The intonation of your voice is so much more important in phone and on video than it is in person. It's still important, but when you're just a two-dimensional, the intonation of your voice is also really important. So we have to do a quick study on, okay, what are the nonverbals and what are the secrets to video interviewing? And there are checklists all over the place. I think the other thing that can screw people up is if you've not used the technology before, you may not know about some of the features, or you may have problems logging in, or you may not know, you know, where's the chat? You know, there are little things that you should familiarize yourself with a new platform so that you feel comfortable with the technology. The last thing about technically related is your connection to the internet. There's nothing worse than lagging and seeing the wheel spin or dropping the call, you know, all together. And those things can happen. You just don't want them to. So if you can take preventative measures, you know, do whatever you can do to hardwire your computer directly to the internet so that you're not reliant on an iffy Wi-Fi signal.
I love this. If anyone wants to reach out to me, I've literally hacked my Zoom to be like a radio broadcast. I've got this thing on my screen that says turn off original sound. There's all these little things that you can do to make yourself sound better. Right. You mentioned like intonation and tonality, you know, having a good mic helps just naturally in regards to that. But how you said it's more important when you're on Zoom than in person. Why do you think it's more important? What can we do to have a little bit better intonation in our voice?
And I love your voice, by the way.
Thank you.
It's so soothing and calming.
Again, it's the microphone. It's the mic.
It's all in a good mic.
Sometimes I can't take a compliment, but at the end of the day, my voice through this mixer and this mic is so much better than when I'm going through just like an old beat up phone. So it does make a difference.
Yeah. when someone is listening to a person talk, right? Yeah. We're watching their facial expressions, but we're more in tune with, you know, hearing the quality, the intonation of their voice. That's what keeps somebody engaged, right? As well as the message. But there are a lot of people who are really auditory learners and they rely heavily on the verbal. But when you, let me do a quick experiment. Do I sound like I'm interested in the job that I'm applying for, that I like what I do?
No, you sound like the guy in Ben Stein, Ferris Bueller.
Right. I like what I do. And I, you know, if I use a voice that has ups and downs and I smile when I talk, I'm much more animated and my energy and enthusiasm for the job comes through. Mm. When we're scared, when we're nervous, it's not uncommon for us to talk softly, to not really give a lot of intonation in our voice, to just sort of moving, we just get this thing over with. But that can really hurt the first impression and the interviewer's perception of who you really are.
I love this, Hannah. I mean, you have the ability to light up a room. And when you did like the Ben Stein monotone, I actually like felt like I wanted to crack a joke or like jump in because of that. And then the weaker tone, like I emotionally could feel the change of energy versus when you're smiling and you're like excited. I can feel the change of energy. It's an actual transfer of emotion, right?
And exactly. And so that's what we are trying to create for the interviewer, because hiring, as much as we would hope that it's all based on skill and data, there's that likability factor. And I think we have to take that into consideration. Who would you rather work with? Somebody who sounds like Ben Stein or somebody who might be able to crack a joke, right? It depends on the individual. And our job during the interview is to come across as likable as possible.
How do I do that? I know that's such a silly question, but how do I be more likable? What if I don't feel deserving? What if I don't think I'm, maybe I don't want to fake it, right? How do I be more likable without trying to be like a scam, you know?
I think some people do have to fake it till they make it, because there are some people that just need a little extra push.
Yeah.
So one of the tricks I used to teach people when I was doing physical, you know, in-person workshops is, if you're that kind of person who gets nervous before an interview, you should do the Wonder Woman pose. And if you don't know the Wonder Woman pose is, it's probably the Superman pose too, is you stand with your hands on your hips, on your waist, and you put your feet about shoulder width apart, and you push your shoulders back. And if you hold that for about a minute, maybe 30 seconds, it gets the endorphins flowing in your body to sort of energize you. The other thing that you should never do before an interview is, whether it's in person or online, is do a lot of reading. Like, don't be hunched over your phone before an interview. You really need to sit up straight, because when you're all hunched down, the body isn't functioning in sort of peak capacity. It's sort of, I'm not a doctor, right, or a nurse, but I've done some reading. And I just know that it's better to sit up straight. So while you're waiting for your interview, do the Wonder Woman, Superman pose, and get yourself going. If you need to do some jumping jacks or whatever, that can work too. You just don't want to do too many that you get hot flashes, but, out of breath. So those are some things. I think one of the things that people, you know, it's the full package. This is why people can't just go into an interview. You really need to prepare for it mentally and mm-hmm. physically. The more confident you are in knowing what's going to happen during the interview, what you're going to say, what you might be asked, the easier it's going to be for you. So if you can role play an interview with somebody who's done interviews before, they can ask you questions, you can practice answering, that's great. If you can answer if you know exactly how you're going to answer some of those tricky questions, and these are the most disliked questions, tell me about yourself, which gets asked almost at the beginning of every interview, you know you're going to be asked that question, have a short, clear answer. And the answer is not, I grew up in a small farm and I love to fly fish and blah, blah, blah. It is, why am I qualified for this job? That's how you answer. Tell me about yourself. And it's about 30 seconds, maybe a minute. It's short because you've got the whole rest of the interview to answer their questions. The next thing is the other question that you have to be prepared to answer is, what are your salary requirements? You're going to be asked that question. Why are you leaving, or why did you leave your last job? You need a good answer for that. It's not that I got laid off or fired. It is, there were changes in the organization. They decided to let go of a lot of people. Unfortunately, I was one of them. But what this has given me the opportunity to do is that, right? Put that finishing positive spin on it.
Yes.
Tell me about a time when you were successful. Tell me about a time when you failed. These are all the standard questions, and they're variations of them. So if you can answer it one way for one, you can answer it for many. That helps somebody be ready to interview because they know what they're going to say when they're asked that question. It doesn't say they're not like slapping their head thinking, oh no, there's that question. How am I going to answer it? Preparing the questions that you know you don't want to be asked, because you're going to be asked them. And then just knowing that this, more than anything, is the interview is a conversation. Hmm. It's a two-way street. They are asking you questions to learn about you, and you are asking them questions to learn about them. The more we can make this a dialogue, an exchange, the better the experience is for both people involved, for me and for you.
How do you do that? It's, for example, if Hannah asks me, what is your, you know, salary requirements, I'm not going to be like, how much do you want to pay me? Or what you want it to be conversational. As the person being interviewed, how and when do I work in those questions? Is there a strategy behind that?
Yeah. And it's something that you do as a podcaster all the time. It's sure. asking those relevant questions that sort of tag on to what we were just talking about. So, salary question is a hard one, but if we say, tell me about, you know, if the interview asks me a question, tell me about a time you've handled conflict in the workplace, right? So I give my answer about, there was a time when, and this is how I dealt with it. And as a result, you know, that employee and I were able to continue to work together regularly and well. Tell me, Ben, how do people in your organization handle conflict? And is that ever an issue?
Right.
Right. So you take that topic or a related topic and you flip it back at them, because you've got the floor when you've given the answer. You're the one talking. So that makes sense for you then to ask sort of that follow-up question related to the one you just answered.
I like these follow-ups. I'm not a pro at this. I'd say I'm bad at it, but I'll give you an example and you can tell me if it's good, bad, or how you would workshop it. But they asked me where I saw myself in 5 to 10 years. And there's 4 people in the room. So I one by one said, you know, I'm curious, how long have you all been with the company? And they told them this and that. And I'm like, so Hannah, you've been with the company 10 years. Mark, you've been with them 4. Mike, you've been here 20 years. Where should I see myself in 5 years? What was your trajectory? And I don't want to one you up. I want to walk with you. Where should I be in 5 years? And the reason I asked that, Hannah, is I had no goals. I actually did not have an answer to that question. So I just let them answer it for me. Is that a cop out or is that good? What are your thoughts?
I think it worked well for you. It may not work well for everybody at every level in the organ, you know, every job level that you're applying for.
Right.
But I think it's absolutely, because the whole idea of that question is, okay, how do you have goals and what would those be and how would they fit in our organization? If you don't know the answer to that question, it's absolutely great to say to them, you know, how long have you been here? Because that does then give you some sort of a starting point,
right?
Of how you're going to answer it. So it is okay to answer a question with a question during an interview, as long as it's done in a friendly tone of voice. And that's one of the things, like for the salary question,
right.
I think that's absolutely a question that should be answered with a question. So, Hannah, how much are you looking for? Well, that's a really great question. I'm sure you've done your research as an employer and have a benchmark. What are you offering for this position?
Is it smart to still know what I'm looking for?
Oh, absolutely. Because they're going to come back and say the range is between X and Y. And you're going to say, that sounds exactly in line with what I'm looking for. But if it isn't, if it's way lower than what you were looking for, you could say, you know what? I'm at a point in my career where I'm making X to Y. Is that going to be a problem? And how can that fit within your company structure?
I love this. In a moment, I want to talk about someone in career, maybe they're not even in career transition, but someone who's already in a career. But before we go there, for job seekers, did we miss anything? Is there anything we should touch on before we pivot here?
Let's pivot, because I don't think we missed anything.
I think we covered a lot, but I didn't know if there was something special that we didn't touch on.
Important stuff we covered.
We did. And oh my God, interviewing tips. We could probably go for like a 10-part series, right?
Absolutely.
I'm curious.
So for the person that's working.
And right? I want to ask you, because I know you're the pro in terms of like LinkedIn and social media and branding. And that's kind of where my line of questioning starts, because a lot of people are working and they might not even think that they're ever going to change careers. Maybe they're totally happy and they don't expect a pivot. Should they be on social media, et cetera, et cetera?
So I once worked for Lee Hecht Harrison, which is an outplacement service provider. And when companies lay off, they hire people from Lee Hecht Harrison to help their employees do a job search. I was one of those people. And one of our biggest clients in Rochester was Kodak. And so the Kodak announced years beforehand that they were going to be laying off people.
Right.
But still, when it happened, the person wasn't ready. They knew it was going to happen.
Right.
So I have seen that happen all too often. And I want to say to anybody that is in a job that you love, that's, you're so lucky, but it may not last forever. So what's your exit plan? Right. Because as much as we love the job, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be there, that our employer will always be the same employer. Things can change. They do change. And we as employees and as should always be looking for our next role.
Sure.
I was talking to a guy this morning and I said, and he's like, I haven't interviewed for a job in 15 years. I love that I've been with my company. They kept giving me projects, but I'm thinking to myself, I probably should be looking. I'm like, yes, every year. You should be looking, because you want to know what else is out there. When you get tunnel vision, when you've been with one company for a long time and you lose sort of a sense of what's happening in other companies and what the trends are and what the pay is, and you need to keep some of those things active. So for the employed person, they absolutely should be paying attention to probably the most important part of their identity, which is their online presence, which is their LinkedIn profile. There are thousands of books and blog posts and training sessions on how to write a really good LinkedIn profile. If you right. don't have a good LinkedIn profile, never too late to fix that thing up. And I think, you know, the reasons for LinkedIn is that it's on 24/7. And recruiters and employers who are looking for talent are going to the biggest pond there is. That's LinkedIn. So it doesn't matter if you're employed or unemployed. If you have the skills and the experience the company is looking for, they'll call you, especially right now. So yeah. You want to make sure that you want to make sure they find your profile. That means that you're going to work really hard on these three sections of your LinkedIn profile. Your headline, which is that spot. It's not right underneath your profile picture. Mm-hmm. It should be given a lot of thought. It isn't just your current job title and your employer. It is, this is what I do. This is why I'm good at doing it. These are some of the skills I have. And this is some sort of bonus piece of information that I think you should know about me. 220 characters, use them all, right? So that headline is the first thing that somebody is going to see. It's great real estate. It's like the headline of an article, right? This is what you're telling me you're all about.
Yes.
The next part is the about section.
Let me pause you for 2 seconds to say anyone who isn't running at the gym, driving, anyone who has a laptop or a desktop near them or has their phone in their hand, pull out your LinkedIn and start looking at yours and updating this as we speak. Maybe you can pause this and do it with us. But I want to set that intention that if anyone's listening and has their LinkedIn in front of them, let's workshop it. So I interrupted you. What was number two?
So yeah, and the headline's probably the easiest, fastest thing to upload.
Yes.
To correct, because we already sort of have a sense of what we really would want to say about ourselves and what we want people to know. So the next section is the about section. This is
scary.
Something that a lot of people don't give a lot of attention to. Yeah. But and it will take longer than probably something you can do on the fly. Like you probably want to create this in a document somewhere, wordsmith it, and then import it in. But you've got, I think, what is it, 20? Maybe it's 2,000 characters. Okay. That's a lot, right?
Plenty.
Of space. And again, LinkedIn is one big database. So you want to make sure that you use as many words and phrases that people would be searching for. It's like having a website, right? SEO. So use the right terminology. But more importantly, tell your story. So if you're meeting somebody for the first time and they say, tell me about yourself, like you did a wonderful job inside and outside of work. Okay. So what is it I need to know about you? If you have to summarize and give somebody a high level overview of the most important things about you that you want them to know and remember, that's the kind of information that you want to put in your LinkedIn about section. This is maybe, and there's sometimes a story behind it. So if you start with, okay, this is what I want people to know, but I also want them to know why I do what I do, right? Is there some cool backstory of how you got into the career you got into? Was there an aha moment? What keeps you in the career? Why are you still doing what you're doing? Any of that kind of information about your motivation and your passion towards the topic provides additional insight. And the more somebody feels they know about you, the more likely they are to take some sort of action.
Right.
There are other information that can go into the about section would be like examples of some of your noteworthy accomplishments or achievements, sort of that horn tooting sort of self-promoting stuff.
Yes.
You know, saved the company X number of dollars, was recognized as the top sales producer, LinkedIn top voice and job search and careers, right? You got to put that stuff in there.
Yeah, Hannah, shout out to myself. I discovered that this podcast is in the top 5% worldwide, top 5% worldwide. Just this morning, I added that to my LinkedIn. So I can continuously, I can be updating this as I go too, right?
Absolutely. That's the wonderful thing about this. If you decide tomorrow that you want to mix it all up and change, you can do that. Right. So the about section is really, it's telling somebody what's important to you and what you're good at doing. And then the other section that doesn't get a lot of attention, but is important, is the skills and expertise. I think it is skills. Section,
sure. Experience.
Give you the thumbs up endorsement from people that
endorsements
know you.
As well.
you have 50 skills and you want to put in skills that don't overlap. You want them to be 50 unique skills. So don't tell me search engine optimization and SEO. It's the same thing. Right?
I need to update that one.
It's one or the other.
Yes.
You wouldn't say content writing and blogging. It's one or the other.
Got it.
So you want to make sure that you choose 50 unique skills and then find people who will endorse them for you. People that know your work. And people are happy to do that if you ask them. Most people just don't know to do that.
Let's walk through that because I believe, you know, to give, you receive. So one thing I like to do is I like to give recommendations. I like to give endorsements. I'm not afraid to ask, but a lot of people aren't in that mindset yet. Like, how do I ask for an endorsement? Hey, Hannah, endorse me today. Is there a polite way to do it to encourage people to actually do it and support you?
Okay. So, give to get.
Yes.
So if you know that you want somebody to endorse you, it sounds cheesy, but you have to do it with a genuine, true, you know, effort. You can't be doing this
right.
Fake. But go to the person that you want to endorse you, write a recommendation. Go write a recommendation on their LinkedIn page or endorse some of their skills. But don't stop there because LinkedIn, people don't check LinkedIn. I think that's one of the thing I need to remind people. I live on LinkedIn. I know that the vast majority of people are on LinkedIn maybe once a month. Right. So
it's hard for me to believe, Hannah, because I spend all my time there.
I know. But most people just don't spend enough
You're
time.
Right.
They don't spend a lot of time there. And they've turned off their alerts so they don't get notifications from LinkedIn
right.
when someone has left them a recommendation or an endorsement. So we go leave that wonderful testimonial endorsement or we write them a letter, we write them a recommendation. Then we do the more important step, which is writing the person an email. Hey, Ben, I just wrote you a recommendation for you on LinkedIn. If there's anything you'd like me to change, please let me know. I'm happy to do that. And I was wondering if you might be able to write a recommendation for me when you have some free time to make this easier for you. It would be great if you could address some of my time management skills, my ability to work on social media and my personal branding knowledge in the workshop that you attended last year.
I like this. So first you gave to receive, but one thing I heard there is you're also coaching them on the best way to do it for you. You actually provided adjectives that you would like endorsed. How do I figure out what those skills even are?
There are a couple of ways. if you look at any job postings, then you usually can see the words that are the terminology. There's a combination of hard skills and technology and industry knowledge that LinkedIn
right.
sort of pulls. But if you look at some of the job descriptions, you'll see here's another way to do it.
Yes.
Look at the profiles of other people who do what you do, doesn't matter where in the world they're located, and see what skills they have. If you want to do this sort of aspirationally, you can look at the skills that people have that are in positions above you and say, oh, I have that skill. I mean, I don't lie. So come back to bite you.
But
if you really do have that skill, go ahead, check it off. So you can look aspirationally. There's also a really cool tool that most people don't know about. And that people will have to Google this. It's called LinkedIn Career Explorer. And what you do is you put in either your title or your aspirational title, and it will show you the skills you have and the skills that you don't have listed in your LinkedIn profile. So it's really powerful. It's such a powerful tool because it's using all of the data from LinkedIn profiles. We've given permission for them to do this. So it's real data, real time. And so all of those things that I talked about, you know, looking at other people's profiles, LinkedIn aggregates all of the people with that job title, and it shows you the most popular skills they have listed in their, in their profile. So there's some really cool ways to use that LinkedIn Career Explorer.
So many cool ways. I love the blend of tactical and also really just keeping it real. Because part of what I heard was for SEO purposes, and you do want to choose some buzzwords that job seekers and employers and people are looking for. But I don't want it to look like a robotic SEO keyword stuffed. I need to bring my personality into it as well. Would you find that personality is even more important than having the right keywords? Obviously, there's a blend,
yes,
right?
Yes, because I love reading the about sections of people who are in marketing. Okay. Anybody who's in marketing, because they are using all the same, they use these marketing tricks. We know stories sell, right?
Sure.
So it's about how to tell a story. And maybe that story doesn't include any buzzwords, but you've hooked them by using a story. So you can get lots of ideas by looking at the way and the style that marketing professionals have written their about sections, because they're really masterful at it. And sometimes they don't even use any keywords, so it can still be done, because you want to give somebody a sense of, okay, who is this person? What are they right. all about? And if you tell your story, or tell a story, which is maybe your story, it lures them in. And the other way, you know, people are human. They want to feel that human connection. So what can you do to help them make that connection?
That human connection. I love this, Hannah. I encourage people, obviously follow me on LinkedIn, obviously connect with Hannah on LinkedIn, and be a copycat. Maybe look at Hannah's profile, see how she has it set up, and use that as a template to rewrite yours. Dive into what she does, read her blog, and use that as a template and a guideline to revamp yours. I know personally, she hasn't been on the show yet, but she's booked. We're recording in about a month and a half. Hala Taha. She's the host of Young and Profiting podcast. She's amazing. And her marketing team is absolutely incredible. So you know what I do? I'll be honest. I'm going to tell Hala this honestly. I take her posts and I find a way to use that. I have her posts next to me. And then I use her posts as inspiration to create my own, because her team's done the study of the algorithm. Her team is tested and true and probably make a lot of money in their marketing. Why not take her as an inspiration? So why not take the Hannah Morgans and the Hala Tahas, use them as an inspiration? You don't need to figure this all out overnight, right? It's all about workshopping and learning more and always be updating, right?
Yeah. And I don't want people to feel they don't know enough about LinkedIn, because whatever right. they know right now is enough to make some of these basic changes.
True.
There's so many advanced things that, you know, business owners know and people who are LinkedIn gurus know. You don't need to know all of that, because here's the thing. If you do the right thing for the right reason, it works. And the right thing is making sure that you're talking about yourself, right? That you're not holding back. And for the right reason is to build relationships. LinkedIn was created on the idea of building relationships, not job searching, building relationships. So anything that you do that helps build a relationship, whether it's commenting on a post or sharing somebody else's post or giving a shout out to somebody on LinkedIn with a kudos or just even tagging them, all of those things are always good.
Yes.
Because they're good for relationships.
This is going to be the most 101 question ever, but I want to hear from you. Why is it important to build relationships?
Because the world is multifaceted and we can't do anything alone. Right. It's this huge, big thing. You don't, even if you're a solopreneur and you have your own business, you don't do anything alone. You work with other vendors and suppliers. We are human beings, and human beings crave human interaction at some point or another.
Yes.
There's this woman left a comment on a LinkedIn post, and she said, I don't want to network with other job seekers and I don't want to work with other people. I'm like, okay. that's not going to get you very far, because right. we have to work with other people. And in your real life, in your personal life, you have a family, mm-hmm. right? You don't do things on your own. I think what we're starting to see is some of this overlap, and it always has been there, but we're seeing it more, that our personal and professional lives are blending.
Right.
And that means that when we need some sort of validation, validation and verification that mm-hmm. what we do matters and who we are matters. And so we get that from our family. We need to get that from work too. People matter. People hire people.
So people matter. People hire people.
Part of that.
And what is a LinkedIn profile? What is a resume? It's just a reflection of a person, right? It's not just what you've accomplished. It's who you are. It's a reflection of you, right?
It is. It is. And it's actually more of a marketing piece than it is sort of a historical look back.
Okay.
It's projecting like, these are the best things that I want you to know about me. But it is personally, this is who I am. This is what I want. This is what I'm telling you. Right. So it is personal. It is. We are human beings. We're not robots. If you wanted to go buy a car and compare and contrast the list of features and benefits of the car, you could do that. You can't do that with a human being at two human beings. There's too many other things involved.
Hannah, my time with you went by so fast.
It did.
I want to save time for the rapid fire round. These are short, sweet, either or fill in the blank questions just to get to know you a little bit better. And then we'll close out.
Okay. I'm
We'll start with coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs or any other animal?
Cats.
Are you a morning person?
Morning, 4 a.m.
Favorite breakfast item?
Coffee.
Coffee, 4 a.m. favorite dessert or guilty pleasure?
Ice cream for breakfast.
I love that. Oh my gosh. We'll do one or two more. What's exciting you today? Like, what is truly getting you out of bed in the morning? What's new and exciting?
I think the empowerment of the workforce, the individuals in the workforce, gets me excited, and staying up on all of the advances and changes that are happening today. That's what I look forward to reading when I get up at 4 a.m.
I love this. We'll close out with the most important one. How do people connect with you? It's going to be in the show notes, but here's the reminder. How should we reach out to you, Hannah?
So I've got a website, careersherpa.net. I'm on LinkedIn. I welcome anybody follow me. It's harder to connect with me, but if you know my email address, which is in my contact information, you can connect with me on LinkedIn.
So read her profile.
I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. So, and I share different stuff on all of those platforms, all related to job search. So please come follow me and engage with me. Send me a shout out.
I'm excited to dive deeper, learn more about you, read your blog, follow you on LinkedIn, careersherpa.net as well. And for anyone who's been taking notes, but they still feel overwhelmed, leave one final tip or just affirmation or intention to let them know that it's going to be okay and they're going to go kick ass. Well, what else should we touch on to close out here?
This thing of life that we're on is a journey, and we're going to make mistakes or we're going to have setbacks, and nothing is irreplaceable or unfixable, right? So enjoy your journey. Learn from these experiences, whatever they have been, the good and the bad, because in the end, you come out a better person in the end. And those experiences make you richer and more valuable.
Hannah, you've been incredible. I hope this podcast makes it to the moon. Everyone needs to hear it. Thank you for spending the time with me. It's been such a joy.
Thank you, Ben. You've been great in asking questions.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.